He's like, if I'm going to drink wine at noon, all right, I better just get started.
Here we go. I mean, that is a little bit how I feel.
Sipping on Sondheim while belting a Bordeaux, pairing the best wine and picking the next show. Here, Broadway guests and us acting like loons. This you can find here on Tennis and Tunes. When Ben Bradley cries, when the fine sighs, whether June's or moon, I simply turn to my favorite.
Welcome to Tannins and Tunes. I'm Jessica.
I'm Jimmy. Hi, friends. Hi, Mom.
Hi, friends. Hi, Moms. Hey, Jimmy.
Hi. Hi, Jessica. How are you?
Good.
I'm good. I got my BB-8 socks on.
Yes.
I got my Marvel superhero backpack, and I'm ready to talk about musical theater.
You might be the biggest nerd I know.
Yeah.
I am recovering.
From what?
Spring break is rough. On me.
Spring break was 2 weeks ago. Still recovering.
Still recovering. Friends, I am in New York for spring break, so we're recording a lot of episodes while I am up here. And that is awesome because I start drinking at like noon, and then I just continue all day because I have to see people.
Yep.
And everybody who knows me wants to meet up for a drink because they know that I love wine. And so they're like, yeah, let's have wine with dinner. Let's go out to this place and get a glass of wine. And I'm like, okay.
I like this idea that they don't want to get a drink with you just to, like, reunite with you. They want to get a drink with you to, like, get some hot wine recs.
They do, though.
You know?
This is what happens. Like, any
just
party that
you.
I'm invited to as well, they always ask me to bring wine. It's probably because I don't cook and they know better. But it's still this thing of like, yeah, let's meet up for wine.
Sure,
again.
Sounds good. Can I just have a water? Nope.
Nope, always wine. So this morning I got up and I danced. I had class, and I was definitely hungover.
Well, that was on you.
Yeah,
all right.
That one was hard.
All right.
And
here's
maybe not the best choice.
Here's my workaround or, like, my fix for, like, exercise. You know, if you, like, you feel
yes.
you don't want to exercise, don't.
Ah, you're so smart,
Jimmy. I'm so sorry.
You're so smart. I want to get straight into our guest.
Let's get straight into him.
Awesome. So today we are joined by Brett Beagle.
Hello.
Hi. Hi. How are you?
Brett, we're so excited to have you here.
It's so weird to see. I guess I never knew what it looks like to
podcast.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
No?
This is what it looks like.
What did you think it was? What did you think it looked like?
I didn't know. I don't know.
Like
what
we just
I
talked
expected.
Into the ether and
yeah, this is fun though. I like this.
Oh, it's gonna get even more fun. Yeah. Brett, before we get into you and your story and your journey and the show that we're gonna talk about today, we gotta get into this wine.
Yeah,
get into the wine.
Because it is already afternoon and my day needs to start
it's
with
time
wine.
To start.
Wine o'clock.
Wine o'clock. Okay, so today we have the Clovis Vin de France, and it's the 2016 vintage.
I was so worried that you were going to, like, screw up the pronunciation of it.
I know Hunchback of Notre Dame.
No. It's not that. It's just, you know, you have a continuing journey of, learning how to pronounce things.
It's getting
not
better.
Not that I'm great, but.
it all started with California.
I think that's so good because you're, like, the things that are difficult now are very easy for you. So
yes.
I was wondering if something that was very easy was going to be, you're just like,
Clovis. Nope.
Clovis.
So this is the, now I'm worried. It's the Clovis Vin de France, and it is a red blend. It's a blend of four different grapes. So we have Syrah, Calidoc, Merlot, and Alicante. And this is certified biodynamic.
Yes.
Biodynamic wines. I love it.
Say
certified
what,
organic.
What is that?
Yeah, explain biodynamic again.
Biodynamic is the one where it gets a little bit into, it's a little less science and a little more mythology. Not mythology, but like mysticism.
There's Thor, the Asgard warrior in this.
It's a little bit more into mysticism about like, you do what the earth is telling you to do, and the seasons aren't based on like an it's kind of like an almanac.
Ooh, my mom would love this wine. If that's, you know, if that's what the wine wants you to do, then that's what you should do, all right?
That's kind of what it is. But it,
just put it out there. Yeah. Just put it out there.
It's also about, like, farming techniques, too. Like, I went to a biodynamic farm where they have chickens and stuff that go through the vineyards, and sheep that are out there grazing in the vineyards, bees that are pollinating the grapes. So, like, everything is working together for the good of the grape.
Oh. It's like the Greeks used to drink it. It's
there you go.
They didn't have any of the technology. Just let
exactly.
it go. Yeah, sheep poop on it and fertilize it.
Exactly.
That's so, this so is disgusting, and I'm so excited.
Just think
it.
About that as
it's,
you.
It's going to be real good, though.
Hold it in your mouth.
The soil is made of clay and limestone. So this is coming from southern France, the Côte d'Aron region, or the southern Rhone of France.
Very nice.
And unlike yesterday, our last episode that we talked about. Yeah, I know. We record these back to back, you guys.
No, we do this live.
We do it live every
person.
Time.
When you're listening to this, we are recording this.
Yes. All right. That would make sense.
That's what's happening.
We talked about hand harvested grapes and people who are in the vineyards during harvest season, literally picking the grapes with their hands, and the difference between that and doing it mechanically with a machine. So this is done mechanically, and that's because the soil can actually handle machines being on top of it. Mm. We were looking at a wine that was being made in volcanic soil that couldn't handle the literal weight of a machine picker.
But this can.
This can. This
oh,
can.
Yeah, this can handle
it.
The
matures
weight.
For 5 months in a tank. After
just
it's fermented.
What kind of tank?
I believe it's a stainless steel tank.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Not
and
concrete
then,
or
nope.
wood or.
And well, and then it's put into oak barrels.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's. Let's see. I want to make sure that I have everything here. Yeah, let's go ahead and smell it.
Ooh.
Ooh, this is gonna be fun.
It's got a good nose.
Yeah, it smells really, really natural. Mm-hmm. Some red fruit.
Yeah, and like
raspberry.
I think sometimes wines are a little subtle on the nose, and this one's like
it's bam,
it's hitting
right
you.
There. Yeah. Hefty aroma.
I'm so bad at talking about wine. I'm gonna tell you a story when we're done with this.
Yes.
About wine tasting.
Oh, you don't wanna?
Well, after we, you know,
let's go ahead and
keep going.
And
okay.
Let's go ahead and taste it. Okay. Then we can hear Brett's story. Mmm.
Ooh, wow.
Long finish.
Yeah.
Really juicy.
Oh, I'm still. It's still finishing.
Still there.
It's
yeah.
Still going on. Yeah. It's
that's
like Phantom of the Opera.
Yes, it is still going.
Are we talking about Phantom of the Opera? Is that what we're doing?
That's the show for today.
Sorry, surprise.
It's really, really juicy. I'm not getting. I got a lot more depth of flavor in the aroma than I do in the taste.
Yeah, it's really. It's smooth, it's juice. I am so surprised that I don't like taste any oak.
No. There's really not a lot of oak on it at all.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of like vegetation in it either.
Mm-mm.
I would have thought that it would have had a couple more green notes in there. I'm getting a little bit of that limestone is in there, but mostly it's that red berry fruit, raspberry, cherry, a little bit of plum in there, which is probably the oak coming out a little bit, but
there's a little bit of tartness.
Yeah,
you know.
definitely has acidity, and that's from the, most likely it's from the Syrah, but then the Merlot is bringing in a little bit of that darker,
fruit. What grapes were in this again?
We have Syrah, Calidoc, Merlot, and Alicante.
Okay, I know two of those wines.
There all you right. go, that's good, that's better than one.
That's true.
Sorry, I'm thinking, I'm like, yeah. Everything you said.
Right. Isn't that fun? Like, sometimes you can't, like, name it until somebody, like,
right.
you can't feel it. It's like when you maybe, like, not see a thing, and then somebody tells you about it, and then you see that thing
right.
everywhere.
Yeah, you're right about
the long-lasting
finish.
Yeah.
Sometimes you drink a wine, it's like water. You're like, tastes like red wine. Great.
Right.
It goes down. This one, like, I wouldn't... I feel like this would take me a while to drink. If you want to sip it, all you need is a little bit, and that's
going to
be...
Exactly. And I think that that's the fact that it's a natural wine. I mean, it probably still has a couple of sulfites in there, but I do know that T. Edmund, who helps make this wine, is really committed to having low sulfites in their wines.
Okay.
And so it's going to be a little bit more natural. They're using natural yeasts. They're not using anything that's chemical being thrown into the wine. And that's pretty cool, too, to get, because at this price point, I think about this wine for $14 at the wine store in the 59th Street corridor.
Oh, okay. Oh, I've never gone in there.
Yeah. Oh, they have some good wines. And that's where I bought this. It was on sale, $14. And it's a Vin de France, which normally I would kind of pass over because I'm like, oh, it doesn't have an appellation in it. It's not region specific. I don't know.
Probably it's just France.
It's just Vin de France. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a French wine. Mm-hmm. But it's because they have all of these different laws in France about what you can put on a bottle. And it's still really great wine. Like, they're spending the money in doing it right. Mm-hmm. And doing right by the grapes and right by the wine and not necessarily focusing the attention on the way that they're marketing it.
Mm. That's good, yeah.
Which is
interesting. The label itself is just like a playing card.
Yeah.
It's very simple.
It looks like a playing card. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Edmund. Yeah.
So
check it out.
Yeah.
If you're in New York, you can go to the wine store at 59th Street, Columbus Circle, that is next to the subway.
Or you could just go to France.
Or you can just go to France and get some wine.
Just anywhere in France. That's how it works,
in
right?
France.
In France. Don't go to France.
Okay, Brett, tell us your wine
tasting
story.
Oh, gosh. Real quick. So when I first moved to the city, I worked at Ruby Tuesday, Times Square.
Yes, you did.
It was like my first 2 weeks working, and they decided to have a wine tasting class just for new servers.
Great.
Love it.
Yeah, just because you need to know the product. Mm-hmm. So I think it took place like noon on like a Tuesday afternoon maybe. And so I go in. I didn't know anyone. And I'll never forget the two girls I sat next to. It was Vivica and Siobhan.
Great.
Like the Irish Siobhan, like, which I had never heard of.
Oh.
S-I-O-B-H-A-N.
Yes.
I remember seeing her name, like, on the screen for, like, the servers for their checks.
Siobhan.
Like, Siobhan. So,
great.
You know, there's, like, maybe eight bottles of wine. And, of course, they're like, you know, just kind of swirl it around your mouth and taste it and spit it out. And then you're going to record what you taste so that you can describe it to guests.
Yeah.
And so... no one spit out the wine.
Right.
We drank the wine. And they
never.
Were like healthy pours, like probably like this, the pour that you've given me here today. So I have this worksheet, and it starts off with the whites, and it starts off with like, oh, I can taste fruits or peach flavors. Mm-hmm. But as I go along, you can see the slow
decline
of my facilities. And by the time you get to the red wines, one says, like, chocolate. One, and then next to that, it says, yucky. And then when you get to my final wine, it's just a sad face. And I left that place wasted at like 1 p.m. in the afternoon.
Yes.
I wish I had saved that piece of paper and framed it because I thought it was just so
funny.
Telling.
Funny enough, we have a same piece of paper for you. We're going to fill it out.
Yes.
And let's see what life is like at 1 o'clock.
So ever since then, it's been smiley face,
right.
smiley face, or yucky. Yeah. That's how I describe wines.
You know what? It's to the point.
That's what he does with
what
customers at work.
I do.
And they're just like, what's your Malbec like? And he's like, smiley face.
It's a little yucky with hints of brown face.
It's that emoji of like the girl just like with the shrugging
shoulders. Like,
that would be fun. And to assign emojis to wine. Next time.
Eggplant.
So, Brett, I want to hear what happened before Ruby Tuesdays.
Oh.
How did you get to working at Ruby Tuesdays in Times Square? Meaning, like, what is your journey to New York?
A lot of poor decisions, Jessica. So I grew up in New Jersey and started doing theater at a young age. Mm-hmm. My very first show was an all-white middle school production of The Wiz.
Ah, yes.
Which You haven't lived till you've seen it, you know, a close to 3-hour production of The Wiz.
Uh-huh.
With, you know, a female Tin Man, a female Scarecrow, maybe 7 boys in the cast.
Now, granted, you guys were still all white. Like,
oh, yeah.
There was no...
Not a hint of color or shade of anything.
And there was no, like, let's, like, put on, you know?
No blackface.
No blackface. I was trying to work around it. Yeah,
but no, we were respectful. even in the early 90s, we were respectful.
I'm very progressive. Always there.
Yeah. And I don't have a lick of artists in my family. Like, no one in my extended family is any kind of artist or any kind of interest in music or anything. So I kind of just remember going to them as a kid when I was, like, in elementary school and seeing the older kids in 7th grade, you know, doing shows. Mm-hmm. And I really got interested, and so I started doing it. And then every year did more and more musicals.
Awesome. And then did you go to school for musical theater?
I did. I went to Wagner College.
Yeah.
In Staten Island.
Nice.
Which is a beautiful campus.
Yeah.
Like, it's stunning. Every time I go there, I'm like, oh, this is such a lovely place on Staten Island that I would not have expected to be here. But
right.
Here it is, sitting atop Grimes Hills.
Yeah. Grimes Hills?
That's what it's called.
What?
Grimes.
That's
or no, Gry, I think.
That sounds disgusting. That sounds yucky.
And it is.
It's a frowny face.
Yeah, if you go down the hill, it's disgusting, but up on that hill.
Up on
that's a nickname, like Crime Alley. It's not actually called Grimes.
No, it is.
But what? You know what? Give it to Staten Island just to be like, we're not going to mince words. This is what it is. All right? We're not going to call it, like, Pennsylvania Avenue or whatever bullshit. It's just like, this is Grimes Hill.
Grimes Hill. And it was a good time. It was the quintessential college theater program, so much drama, so many costume parties, everything was super high stakes, like, at all times.
Always.
I'll never forget my freshman year, we were doing Into the Woods, you know, and it's such a momentous occasion to be cast on the main stage, at any theater.
Of course.
You know.
And you played a lovely little Red.
I was gorgeous. Some would say transcendent. but I was a freshman, so I wasn't cast, but... They put up the cast list in such a dramatic fashion. I feel like nowadays it would just be posted online or something, but back then it was like a piece of paper that everyone, like vultures, waiting, circling the main hall, waiting for the cast list to go up. Well, it goes up, people are disappointed. Someone comes back maybe the next day, and there is a smear of fecal matter on the cast list of a someone who was not happy with the results of that casting. And that was like the first 2 weeks of my college experience. I was like, okay, here we go. This is what we're getting into.
And that person raised the stakes a couple weeks ago.
At the Magic Mike.
Yes.
So
Jimmy
it?
Does not know this story about what
I still don't have all the details. I want the details.
Everybody wants the details.
I want give me those deets right now.
My mom and Jimmy, who have no idea what you're talking about.
Your mom and me finally have something in common.
Yes. So the Magic Mike audition a couple weeks ago here in New York City, someone, accidentally or not, left some poop.
What?
In the holding room.
What?
Of an audition. Like, in the middle of it.
How? Not
no
even why.
No one knows.
Not even why. How?
And then it happened again at Ripley Greer.
It did? I didn't know it struck again.
Maybe that was a rumor.
Was it?
I don't know.
It wasn't a Magic Mike audition again.
I hope so. I hope it's just the show is just plagued by
poop. Just poop.
But now
the poop play.
Turd burglar.
And it was because Magic Mike is a non-equity gig or a non-equity job. Now the hashtag is, and I'm sorry, Mom, that I'm about to say, she's going to be so embarrassed. It's hashtag ask if shit's equity instead of ask if it's equity.
Fuck you.
So that's been what's going on around. But if you haven't seen the video that the cast of The Prom made about it, it's so funny.
Oh, I'm going to watch that. So
New York City is ablaze.
Oh, yes.
With this drama that apparently was started at Wagner.
Yeah, it started here. I think it's the same person, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to say names, but I think I know who it was at Wagner College.
So it's still alive and well.
Oh, my goodness. Or could it be a copycat? They saw that.
Yeah.
You know?
Like the Dexter copycat killer. Did you ever hear about him? I also listen to true crime podcasts. So I know all about them.
Yes.
This is going to be a true crime podcast as well. Mm-hmm. We're just all your interests. So we're going to true crime podcast, mm-hmm. and then we're going to do a little My Dad Wrote a Porno.
Yes.
All right.
My favorite.
But it's going to be your dad. So.
Oh, I would not want to read that. Or maybe I would. I don't know.
It's going to, you know.
Keep going.
Oh, no. I have nothing to say. I never do, but I keep talking.
Brett, tell us a little bit about you moved to New York City straight after college.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I moved home that summer to save up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked at TGI Fridays.
Yeah.
And
how was their tasting notes?
You know, we didn't taste anything. I think they just...
We just said it was good.
Which is probably the best thing for you.
Yeah, I think everyone knew what they were getting into, so we just sort of, here you go. So I worked there for the summer, sold my car, mm-hmm. moved to the city, started doing summer stock gigs.
Yeah.
I did that. I did some plays. And then I eventually got the national tour of Young Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. Which I believe we're talking about today.
Yes, we are. Yeah,
it's amazing. And then did a million more productions of Young Frankenstein after the tour was over. And then, you know, I've worked regionally. I've been doing some commercials.
Yeah.
And getting, you know, whatever's going to pay the bills,
yeah.
I will do for money.
Yes. Story of my life.
True.
So let's talk about Young Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. So you know the show inside and out. But I want to talk about auditioning for the show.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you typically sing for your Young Frankenstein audition?
So I sang this song called Again, which is from A Day in Hollywood, A Night in the Ukraine.
Yes.
Ooh, yes.
An oldie but a goodie.
An oldie but a goodie. And it's like about the Marx Brothers.
Yep.
And then it's also about like old Hollywood musicals. And
Jerry Herman, yes? No.
No.
Mm-mm.
Who is
it? In fact, I should know it, but I don't know who wrote
it's
it.
Fine.
I forget their name.
It's more on me than on you.
I feel like it has like a foreign sounding name.
That's fine.
Oh, yeah. It's Frank Lazarus.
Oh, yes. Yes,
the composer. Frank Lazarus. Lyricist is Dick Vosburgh.
Mm.
So that's interesting. I would not have gotten that, you guys.
No, that's why it's not.
That's why we have the internet.
That,
But it was just. It was a song that was assigned to me in college
like
a musical theater performance.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of had this teacher, this famous teacher at Wagner, or famous from Wagner at least,
mm-hmm.
who was notoriously blunt and kind of told it like it was, which is great for me. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the type of teacher I like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, tell me I'm bad. That's mm-hmm. great. But I remember her sitting down with me and her being like, I don't know what to do with you. She's like, I think you have a dark sense of humor. And so she gave me all these crazy songs about, like, you know, the poisoning pigeons in the park. And
yes.
I was like, what does this say about me?
But because if you like, look at Brett, which I hope you all do and stalk him, he has, like, his, like, face, even if he's not smiling, like, has a smile to it constantly. You know, it's just, it's very genial, but yes, it hides a dark soul.
It does, and that's what I like to bring out. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do a sweet song, but it's going to be a little weird at the end.
I think that would work for Young Frankenstein. That makes total sense.
Yeah, and so this song is, the joke is that you've broken my heart, but I'd go back to you again and again and again and again and again and again and again. And he sings it for like 16 bars, just the word again.
Do you sing it like that? Do you just say sing the word again and again?
You do.
Again?
You sing it. It's all different. Like again, 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 again. Oh,
but in your cut.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
It's most of my cut, actually, because it's like 16 bars
right.
worth. And it's definitely a hit or miss song.
Oh,
tell you that.
Okay. You get down in the room and they're like, thank you.
The one time I was singing and the guy was like, I finished and he's like, enough. He's like, we're going to give you a call back. Please just
oh, well, that's nice.
Singing.
Yeah, I was like, great, thanks.
I would be like, enough. Please go home.
And he's like, we get it. We get what you're serving.
Yeah.
You presented yourself.
Well, and you play all sorts of different roles when you've done productions of Young Frankenstein, correct?
Yeah. So on the tour, I played Ziggy the Village Idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Who's not in the movie. He's just this kind of random featured ensemble character
yes.
that solves major plot points randomly.
I thought you were going to say crimes.
Also crimes. That was my backstory. Like, at the ensemble, I'm like, Ziggy's a detective.
Ziggy's yes. a detective. He's hard-boiled, all right? His partner left him. He just smokes a lot of cigarettes in the background.
Yeah. And I would say Ziggy was definitely the favorite among the cast. Like, everyone had everyone wanted to have a story with Ziggy. Like, Ziggy's my child. We think that these two had a baby, and Ziggy's maybe the child, or maybe he's the father of this person.
That's
he was an enigma.
A background story is the best thing to do.
Yeah, well, that's acting, Jimmy.
Yeah.
You have to do your research.
No, that's... Yeah, I understand, like, my inner character and whatever,
yes.
but just being like, who are you to... Like, we're going to pretend that, you know...
Oh, yes.
I bought a loaf of bread for you from you, and now you're like...
Yes.
Blah, blah. It's acting in Cats.
It is acting in Cats.
You know?
And also on a long run.
Yeah.
You, know,
yes.
you need something.
Yeah.
8 months later, you're like, God, we got to do something. I'm looking at you every day on stage. What are we doing?
That's true.
You know?
And then what other characters have you played?
In Young Frank?
Mm-hmm.
So I did, so on tour, I was Ziggy, and then I understudied Igor.
Great.
And then as Ziggy, I also played the Shoeshine Man and a werewolf. And a mad scientist, and a ship porter who farts.
And what were their backstories? Tell us, why does the ship
do we have an hour
fart?
To sit down and
what about the werewolf? Why does he get his werewolf?
The werewolf just wanted to dance.
Yeah.
And that's why he's a werewolf?
Yeah, and he like attacks the horse and buggy, and then he gets mad, and he shuffles off to Buffalo.
Here's my thought. The werewolf was an actual wolf that got bit by a rabid dancer, and now they're a werewolf
at the Magic Mike ECC.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, then I did that, and then I did it regionally again, which was basically the two regional productions I did were just a remounting of the tour. It
got
was kind of like I walked in, I was like, "Hi, you remember me?
Costume
still fit
here.
If you want." And they're like, "Okay, yeah, Brett. Yeah,
yeah.
We know you've done a lot of research on your background. We're gonna let you continue that and share that with regional audiences."
So what was Ziggy's act two? You know,
oh, there's a lot of Ziggy. and then eventually I did Igor.
Great.
I did on tour a few times
yeah.
when he went down when the poison worked.
Right.
Finally,
it took
a few times for me to find the right recipe, but I found it. And
someone that wouldn't kill him.
Yeah,
he went down.
And that right. is the role that was originated by Christopher Fitzgerald.
That's
on
correct.
In the Broadway show.
Future friend of the pod.
Yeah. Future friend.
Who is amazing.
Yes.
So
and
good.
In the workshop was Roger Bart.
Yes, and then Roger Bart got bumped up.
Is it the story correct that it was originally Dr. Frankenstein was originally Zach Levi, and then or at least for the Broadway show it was going to be him, but then he took Chuck, and so they bumped
maybe.
Up
maybe. And then
Bart.
Well, Brian D'Arcy James did the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was Brian D'Arcy James and Roger Bart.
And Kristen Chenoweth.
Kristen Chenoweth was Igor?
That's
so
gonna be,
good.
Yeah.
Before she got
so
the hump removed.
Yeah.
Right.
Ooh.
And Mark Kudish was there. And yeah. Oh. Yeah.
And apparently Cloris Leachman.
Well, that's a whole thing.
Yeah.
So
what?
So Cloris Leachman was supposed to... She was in consideration to play her part from the movie.
Yeah.
And then... They were like, they basically, production came back and said, we want to keep it separate. Mm-hmm. We want Young Frankenstein, the musical, to not be the movie. And so if we have Cloris Leachman play her
everybody's
going to be comparing it. And so we can't have you do it. But she ended up replacing Beth Level. So Beth replaced Andrea Martin.
No, she never went on. She was supposed to come.
That's right.
Because she,
right.
They didn't think she could do it because she was so old, you know, and it's eight times a week. That's like a rough.
Yeah.
And she.
Wait, Beth Level?
No.
Cloris Leachman.
Beth,
you are 40. I don't know if you can do this.
That's right.
Yeah.
She never went on.
But then she went on Dancing with the Stars.
Yes.
And apparently then they were like, oh, maybe she can do this because look at her. And then the show closed ultimately before she could.
Before Cloris could go on?
Mm-hmm.
But she was. Set to.
Yeah.
She was set to replace Beth Level.
Which I would have killed to see Beth Level.
Oh, I know. I know.
Love her.
Me too. Yeah. And there were some other really good replacements,
mm-hmm.
some other people, like Kelly Sullivan
mm-hmm.
went on for Sutton Foster, and that was cool. And
Corey English, yeah, did Corey. Igor.
Yeah. So it's a star-studded Broadway show.
Yes.
But it didn't receive the mm-hmm. reviews, because basically what they did was they were trying to do Producers again. Mm-hmm. And Producers, if we're remembering back to the early 2000s, that broke box office records. It yep. broke Tony records. Like,
right.
It was huge. And so they said, well, if we can do it once, we can do it again.
Yep. Yeah.
Let's do it with another Mel Brooks show.
I think it suffered from hubris in it.
Yeah.
I think, mm-hmm. and I remember that. When Producers came out, I think it was the first time they started the premium tickets.
Yes,
I was like, great, premium tickets are going to be $450.
Right.
And I think it was sort of, everyone was sort of like, how dare you charge this much? Mm-hmm. But, you know, it had broken all these records and it had been so successful. And so I think the issue with Young Frankenstein was that it hadn't even opened. And they were like, here's premium seating $500 because it's going to be a success.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Whereas Producers had earned that premium seating by being
right.
such a smash hit. This mm-hmm. one hadn't even opened. And obviously other theaters started doing this, other shows started doing premium seating, but this, I think, was the first time that they were so sure of themselves, and I think maybe the theater community and was sort of not happy about that.
Right.
Like, well, why are we going to spend so much money on a show we haven't seen yet?
Yeah.
That's true. I mean, could there also be a thing for, like, or inversely, like, expectations?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people might also be expecting not Producers per se, but something like Producers. If it is, like, Mel Brooks and Susan Stroman, you know.
And if anything, Young Frankenstein, the movie, is much more well-known than the Producers.
Yes.
So it was
right.
sort of
yeah.
had more to live up to.
But I will say, you take something, yes, because if you take something that's not well-known, then it actually has a better life to mm-hmm. stand, you know.
Yeah, well, because people aren't comparing it. I think that the Young Frankenstein movie is so beloved by people.
Yeah.
Though my students have no clue what it is now.
Ugh.
Which because I play a clip from the Au Suite Mystery of Life
mm-hmm.
scene,
mm-hmm.
and I eventually had to take it out of my class because it was so uncomfortable to watch them not get it
mm-hmm.
and not realize that it's funny.
Yeah.
And then me standing there while this woman like has an orgasm.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And me being like, yes, this. Oh no.
No.
Okay, let's not cover this. Got it.
So good, though.
Right? It's so good and it's so funny, but if you don't understand
mm-hmm.
it.
One time in class, in a musical theater history class, I put on, we were talking about William Finn, and so I was like, I love William Finn, here's, and I thought this was going to kill, I gave them My Unfortunate Erection,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so I like put it on, and and then it said the words, and it was dead silent,
ugh.
And yeah, and now
okay.
Yeah, and I've never gone on stage ever again.
Nope. That is not true.
I'm done.
One cool thing, or another cool fact about the show, is that Thomas Meehan helped write the book.
Mm.
And he yes. also did the book for Annie,
yes.
among other things. But he's kind of like that book writer that comes in and helps out who we don't really give enough credit to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has that big, like, walrus mustache.
Uh-huh. Yes, mm-hmm. He looks crazy.
Yeah, he passed away, right?
He did recently.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's great.
Yeah, so we don't get, well, we already have Annie, too, right? We have Annie.
Well, there are. There's
Annie,
Annie
Warbucks.
Warbucks, and there's Annie 2, Miss Hannigan's Revenge.
Oh.
What
about Annie and
you
London?
You need to find someone who did that show. Bring them on. If you're out there.
I don't think they want to talk about it.
They were all silenced after. They all disappeared.
Well, I think it only did like 4 performances in D.C.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, they started, and then they were like, never mind.
This doesn't feel good.
This isn't going to work.
This isn't good.
He has also received the Tony Award for Best Book of a Musical 3 different times. Because he won it for Annie, for Producers, and for Hairspray.
I don't know if you know, though, his great success, all the writing done by his mustache.
That doesn't surprise me.
No.
It's an impressive mustache.
It's an impressive, because it writes scripts. It has to be that impressive.
What are some of your favorite moments in Young Frankenstein?
Oh, my God. There's so many. And I'll tell you, it's one of the shows where we were at the end of the run, and I would still hear things, and I would laugh backstage.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I think the hermit scene where the monster breaks into the blind hermit's...
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
And he's like, oh, would you like a cigar? It's a a schwanzenfugendugendurgen. And the mom, it's just so funny. And it never, and it always killed every night. Mm-hmm. I love that. Oh, God. What? Anything Igor does, the whole hump.
Yep.
Thing.
What hump?
What hump? I mean, it's
no, I'm literally asking what hump.
Oh, well, you see, Jimmy. But it's one of those shows, it's like Spamalot, it's like producers, where it's like the jokes are a mile a minute. It's like joke, laugh, beat, laugh, and it just, it kills. And
like even the dancing is funny. Like the dancing serves a purpose for comedy rather than to show off skills or to like move the story along.
And it's the first show I've ever done that was like a, what's the word, like a remounting, you know, it was a broader production that toured, and so I had never done a show where they're like, well, everything's already established, and we're just going to teach you what's already there.
Yes.
And, but it was the first time that I ever really looked at choreography, because I'm not a dancer.
A dancer who dances?
I'm a character man who moves with grace, you know?
God, I'm a mover. God, a mover tries hard.
Yes. But it was the first time I was like, this thing is choreographed to an inch of its life. Everything has a purpose. There's no movement that's happening that doesn't have a purpose for the story or the picture, or like everything was I was so impressed. I remember watching it, you know, cause I wasn't in any of the dance numbers, but watching the dancers work their ass off. I'm like, wow, look at them go. Like it's so just beautifully choreographed to an inch of its life. And I was so impressed with how intelligent and how creative Susan Stroman is.
I
became a lifelong fan after that. I'm like, I'm going to see anything she does because I think she's so impressive.
She is,
And she also, like, mixes, like, modern and classic styles so well. This is a modern story and a modern comedy, but she's also, like, bringing in, like, classic musical theater to it. Yeah, I think that's brilliant.
I agree.
Yeah.
Now that we've got some wine in us, we're gonna play games right now.
Oh my God.
So, our game today is really special.
A game.
Are you ready?
We have a game. We have a game. And you're gonna think that it is really easy when we start, but you have to do it in 90 seconds. So you are going to, I'm going to give you a song from a Broadway musical. You're gonna tell me what the Broadway musical is.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to go through 30 of these.
I'm here to help.
You're going to play
in 90 seconds.
A clip?
Nope. I'm just going to tell you the song.
Oh, just tell me the song.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, gosh.
Are you ready?
I've never seen Brett more
I'm
like...
so nervous.
Like death in his eyes.
Okay.
There you go.
So we have to not stop because we only have 90 seconds.
And I just call it out.
And yep, you just call it out.
Okay.
Yep. And if you get stuck, Jimmy can
I'll
try to help.
Jimmy.
I'll get you.
With wide eyes.
Right. Here we go. Luck Be a Lady.
Guys and Dolls.
Tomorrow.
Annie.
Vilkeman.
Cabaret.
Movie in My Mind.
Movie in My Mind.
Oh, Chorus Line. No, that's dancing in that's
Movie
in
my
mind.
Mind.
Oh, Sunset Boulevard? No.
My Favorite Year.
We can always skip.
Skip.
Hello.
Book of Mormon.
Aaron Burser.
Is that Hamilton?
Hamilton.
Yep. December 1963, I Won a Night.
Jersey Boys.
Aquarius, Let the Sunshine In.
Here.
Rain in Spain.
My Fair Lady.
If I Were a Rich Man.
Fiddler.
I Feel Pretty.
West Side Story.
I Dreamed a Dream.
Of Days Gone By. Les Mis.
Some Enchanted Evening.
My Fair Lady. No, King and...
South Pacific,
the other one.
Music of the Night.
Phantom.
Don't Rain on My Parade.
Funny Girl.
Forget About the Boy.
Thoroughly Modern Millie.
You Can't Stop the Beat.
Hairspray. Thomas Mann.
Right? Dancing Queen.
Ugh, Mamma Mia.
Memory.
Cats.
Yeah.
All That Jazz.
The Chicago.
Love You, Bohem.
Rent.
Schadenfreude.
Avenue Q.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What I Did for Love.
Chorus Line.
76 Trombones.
Music Man.
Defying Gravity.
Wicked.
Edelweiss.
Sound of Music.
Summer Nights.
Grease.
You Won't Succeed on Broadway.
Spamalot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got 26 out of the 30.
Yes.
So the one that movie in my mind comes from Miss Saigon.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
There's no movie in that musical.
It's in her mind.
It's in her mind, Jimmy. No, good. So you are officially a musical theater nerd.
I did score very highly on my musical theater history class in college with aforementioned very strict teacher.
Was it smiley face plus?
Mm-hmm.
They gave you smiley face plus.
It was a grin.
I love it.
Tell me a little bit, and it doesn't have to be just about Young Frankenstein. It can be about any show that you've done. I want to know one of those moments that you look back and you're like, that was either terrifying or, like, completely embarrassing. Mm. Like, one of those moments you look back and you're like, oh, man.
Okay, we'll keep it Young Frank themed. Cool. So, the big number in Act 2 is Putting on the Ritz, and it's, like, this huge number. It's, like, a, I don't know, 6 or 7 minute long number. There's a big tap number. The monster's tap dancing. It's the
On the Ritz.
And I was the only one not in the number.
So like,
I'm pretty sure I was the only one. Maybe Inspector Kemp might not have been in it, but everyone else in the cast. So like they'd be rehearsing, and it was a big number. It took a long time to rehearse,
right.
And you know I'd be like, Brett, yeah, go take a break.
Okay.
And I like I'd clap loudly like when they were done rehearsing, like the only one clapping. Like, good job, guys.
And they just like look at you, just like
all sweating and they're like dripping. I'm like, great
dead
job.
Stares.
But so in the at least the tour version, I don't even know if they did it on Broadway, but in the tour version or in the movie, the number ends and all the photographers run downstage and they all start taking pictures and that's what sets the monster off and he gets all upset and he starts thrashing through the town. So in the musical, they had Ziggy the Village Idiot. I would come through the back of the house and I would run down the aisle and I'd run up to the front of the stage with this giant prop camera and I'd like it would flash and that would like scare the monster.
Yeah.
And so the number would star and I'm in this costume. I'll have to show you a picture of what I looked like for 9 months. I looked like Grisabella the Glamour Cat meets homeless man meets funny Transylvanian.
Grisabella's kind of already homeless.
She's, I mean,
a little bit. So.
But like even more.
You're
even
like
more. Mascara's just like running down your cheek.
And we called him like mini Igor. Like clearly Igor understudy. Like I had like this like character makeup and I had this giant like Christmas, like a wool hat with like these little like strings hanging and this giant overcoat. But anyways, I had this big, I guess they're like overalls, this like bib overall. And I had a big pouch in front, like one of those pajamas with the pouch in the butt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was in the front and it like buttoned up. And then I wore a vest over that and then my coat. So anyways, the number starts and I'm like, okay, I've got like 6 minutes. I'm like, I have to go to the bathroom. So like, let me just like go in the bathroom and like take off my coat, take off the 18 buttons on my vest,
right.
Unbutton my overalls, take
love
them
this.
Off. And I'm like, you know, sitting on the toilet and, you know, the monitor's playing and I lose track of time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to Putting on the Ritz, it builds and it's like, you know, dun 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 and then like the dance dun 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 da 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 and it starts like picking up and all of a sudden I'm like, oh my god, I have to get on stage and I also have to run to the back of the house in a new theater that I've never been at because we're on tour.
Mm-hmm.
So I have never been more panicked in my life and I just started laughing because like it's like the soundtrack is the Putting on the Ritz like speeding up tempo and I'm like putting on my diaper thing and I'm putting on my vest and I'm like running down the hallway like sprinting looking like a crazy homeless person. And I've never been more frightened in my life that I was not going to be there to take a picture of the monster.
And
then he was just going to stand there. But I made it.
You made it. Okay. There you go.
I made
That's
it.
What we all,
theater finds
I'm
a way.
It does.
You know?
Theater finds a way.
But that was definitely literally an oh shit moment.
Yes.
Where I was horrifying.
So that was Act 2 when he goes down okay. Because I remember the end of Act 1 where he also goes down the audience. Does that happen before?
Yeah, yeah. Act 1 is when the villagers are coming because they hear moans, and which is also a very clever song where Igor
right.
like, we need to cover. And the monster's like, ooh! And all of a sudden Igor's like, ah! And he starts singing over the whatever vowel the monster's singing on. He starts singing. And then, yeah, that's also another one where they fool the villagers, but then the last minute the monster crashes through and goes down the aisle.
Here's the thing. I was in college, and I took the trip that I think we all took to, like, see if I can, like, want to come here. And it was, like, 2008, and I think we got premium tickets to go see this show. I was, like, J'd on the aisle, and then the monster comes down, and he looks at me.
Mm-hmm.
And then he freaks out even more, and he dashes off.
Yes.
And I was like, I got picked. New York is for me.
Yes.
New York, here yeah, I come.
Exactly.
What a moment.
What I'm trying to say is, fuck you, monster. How dare you ever look at me? Because I could have been spared all of this.
What I think is interesting is that we don't see Young Frankenstein produced very often.
No.
And I think that it should be, but maybe you can speak to some of the things that you would notice would be difficult and why theaters maybe shy away from it.
I know the answer.
Great.
It's a huge freaking show. It is so massive.
Yeah.
And like I said, I've teched it 4 times. Mm-hmm. And I remember the 4th time, I was like, I'm teching the show again. I can't believe I'm teching the show again. It's
right.
such
and that's
a monster
over
of a show.
Right,
you know,
right.
When you did the shows. So you were in shows, but then you've also been behind the scenes teching shows, right?
I see. You're joking.
this is what happens a lot.
Uh-huh. I'm like, oh, that was a joke. I see. but it's such a massive show, and I think and originally it was supposed to play the St. James, and then they updated it, and they put it at the now Lyric Theater.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the second biggest Broadway house, I think it is.
I think it's the biggest.
No, I think the Gershwin's the biggest.
The Gershwin's,
But it's, you know, a massive theater, and but it's so big. You know, every scene is a new location, and every location is a huge location.
Right.
You know, it goes from New York to a dock to a train station to a cruise ship to the dungeons to a carriage to this to the lab.
You can't just, like, use a unit set.
You can't use a set. You can't, like, spin a set. I mean, I'm sure they'll do it with 5 instruments and, like, scaffolding someday.
Right.
They'll remount an off-Broadway revival with, like, 5 characters playing.
I just saw the Yiddish Fiddler on the Roof, and it was amazing, but it was bare bones, and they just used, like, a bunch of tables to, you know, and chairs to make the sets, you know, to make the home and the places. And that's what they're going to do for, you know.
Yes.
Also, they're going to do Young Frankenstein in the original Yiddish.
Oh, yes.
As well, of course.
Yes.
But I do think that that's a huge, you know, financial for a lot of theaters. Like, you can't afford to put on a giant show like that sometimes. It's lots of set pieces, lots of different costumes. Mm-hmm. There's, I mean, I guess you could pare down the ensemble, but there's supposed to be big, huge Broadway numbers. And it's just, you know, even on tour, it was downgraded from the Broadway cast. I think we had 5 women, 5 men dancers, 4 character men and women, and then there's 8 principals plus swings and stuff.
Is there a difference between the production of Young Frankenstein and maybe the production of The Producers? Because I still kind of feel like The Producers gets produced more often.
Yeah, I think that it comes back to the sets.
I'm trying to think. I think The Producers, like, they spend a lot of time in the office, I think, in The Producers, maybe. And maybe, I guess Springtime for Hitler is the kind of biggest flashy number. But you can do that with, like, a staircase and some...
It also might just be, like, The Producers kind of feels more, like, viable. Not that, like, Young Frankenstein's not, but, like, people know...
People know it.
Yeah.
Like, I think that my kids in my class would know Producers more than they would know Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
As a musical
entity.
So
strange, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a lot to do with it, too. Because I think it only played a year on Broadway.
Right.
And it was, you know, it was a big splashy thing, and it had all these amazing people in it, but it's still...
I love telling people that about Megan Mullally, who is in it originally, and I'm like, you think of her from, like, Will and Grace and even Parks and Rec, but no, she's a Broadway star.
She's a Broadway star.
Singing.
Right.
And
she's fantastic.
Take Karen and put her and make her sing, and you kind of got her character.
Yep. It makes sense.
She was amazing.
Brett, where can people find you on social media? I just want to highlight, first of all, your website, because your About Me is the funniest thing I've read. I think that it's so perfect.
Oh, God. yeah, brettfiegel.com if you want to look at pictures of me and read a blurb about me and look at my resume.
And then, like, you see that, like, beautiful, like, smiley face, and just know that there's an inner, deep, dark soul
in there.
In there.
She's dark. and then, I guess on Instagram, if you want to follow me, it's Bretter Than That.
Cute.
Like, I can do better than that. But it's not from that. It's just that I'm Bretter than you, and I'm Bretter than you.
Because
I'm more of a Brett than you are. I'm Bretter than that. But it used to be.
I'll give
so
that.
Instagram handles, you can only do lowercase letters.
Yeah.
You can't differentiate with a capital letter.
Oh, no.
So my original screen name was 2 T's, please, because Brett often, you know, gets misspelled. I think it looks incomplete with 1 T. Personally.
I did it when I first met him, and he was so kind. You know,
I pulled you aside.
He pulled me aside, slapped me across the face, and he said, "You never do that again."
Never do that. But lowercase, it looks like twats, please, like TWOTS, please. And people are like, "Why is it twats, please?" They're like, "No, it's not." And first of all, no. I don't know. No twats.
No twats, please.
And secondly, if I was going to do that, I would have spelled it right. I'm not going to spell it with an O. No, better than that. Please.
I'm Bretter than that.
I'm Bretter than that.
All right.
So now I'm Bretter than that.
I love it. I also love the story behind it.
Yeah.
Jimmy, where can people find you?
People can find me at 2twats, please, on both Instagram and Snapchat and all things. You can find me on Instagram at Jimmy Robertson and Twitter at Jimmy_Robertson. Jessica?
You can find me at JMHumphrey1 on all of the things, Twitter, Instagram, all that fun stuff. And then you can follow Tannins & Tunes on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And visit our website, tannins&tunes.com.
Where we'll have the exact same about me as Brett Fiegel.
Yeah.
I'm just going to copy and paste.
Yeah, use it. Go for it. For copyright.
And you can email us at tannins&tunes@gmail.com. I want to get to a review.
Oh, we got another review?
We have a review.
Yay!
It's from 3Part, and it says, "Varietals and Variety. Can't wait to delve deeper into this podcast." So that's really, really nice.
Thank you.
Thanks, 3Part. Because every time that you leave a review, we will pair a wine with your username. So
is there like a 3 wine or something?
So I actually did a little bit of research because I was interested.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I came up with is Hedges CMS Red. And
okay.
So it's a blend of 3 different grapes, Carignan, Mourvèdre, and
3 parts?
Going with 3 parts.
Yeah.
And you can pick it up. It's also super affordable. It's like $13. Yes. And you can get it at like Total Wine. So you don't have to be in New York specifically to pick this up. You can go to your local wine store or your local wine superstore, like Total Wine, and get it. And it's great. It's really, really good. It's a solid red choice to have as like a table wine.
Ooh, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. So 3Part, thank you so much for leaving us a review. If you want to leave us a review, we will pair a wine with your username, and we will donate $1 towards fire relief in Napa Valley.
Hmm.
So make sure to leave your reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks. Brett, thank you for joining us.
Yeah,
this was
me.
Awesome. So much fun.
Yeah.